For the last, I guess, 3 years now, our relationship with artificial intelligence has been a lot like, talking through a walkie-talkie.
Oh, for sure. Very one-to-one.
Right. You press a button, you type a prompt into a text box, you wait for the static to clear, and then you get a single answer back.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a novelty, right?
Yeah.
But it was highly contained, waited for you.
It did. It was completely passive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But looking at our stack of sources for May 6, 2026, it is incredibly clear that the walkie-talkie era is just dead. AI is no longer waiting for you to press the button.
No, not at all. The containment phase is entirely behind us now. What we are seeing, what we're living through right now, is the deployment of ambient continuous intelligence.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We have a seriously dense stack of newsletters to get through today. We're pulling from Mindstream, The Code, The Information, Axios AI Plus P, and TLDR.
It's a heavy stack today, yeah.
It is, but while they cover seemingly disparate industries, they are all mapping different battlefronts of the exact same war. AI is aggressively graduating from a simple chat interface into a deeply integrated, like, autonomous layer of our world.
Yeah, autonomous is the key word there.
Right. So our mission for you today is to map out this massive architectural shift. We're starting at the absolute bedrock of physical hardware and enterprise software, moving into the messy corporate fallout where this tech hits human capital, and ending with the vicious battle for your pocket and potentially your living room.
And we really have to start with the hardware, right? Because the software is entirely bound by the physical constraints of it.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because we talk about AI as this ethereal cloud, but it's really just heavy metal and silicon.
Exactly. It requires a staggering amount of physical infrastructure. And right now, that infrastructure is severely bottlenecked. Mindstream actually reported this morning on a new semiconductor company heading toward a massive IPO.
Right, and it's not just any chip company.
No, and let's look at the specifics of their architecture, because that explains why the market is suddenly so hungry for new silicon. The legacy chips we've been using, they were designed for linear processing.
Step A, then step B.
Precisely. But the software demands have pivoted entirely. We are seeing these foundational infrastructure companies rush the public markets because they are building optical interconnects and, well, entirely new memory architectures just to keep up with what the software is trying to do simultaneously.
It's like right now, software is acting like a gas expanding in a container. It will just consume absolutely all the compute you give it.
It's insatiable.
Yeah, that's why these infrastructure companies are rushing the IPOs. They are desperately trying to build a bigger container. And if you look at the software side, it perfectly explains why the compute is getting devoured so quickly.
You're talking about Palantir.
I am. Let's look at the information's teardown of Palantir today. They are painting an almost, intimidating picture of enterprise dominance. Because Palantir isn't just selling a smarter search bar for corporate documents anymore,
No, they are selling an automated nervous system, literally. What Palantir has done, and really why they are soaking up all the growth in the enterprise sector right now and just crowding out legacy software players, is that they aren't just reading a company's data.
Right, yeah.
Their AI models are actively rewriting enterprise resource planning systems in real time.
Wait, like without human oversight?
In many cases, yes. If there is, say, a supply chain disruption in a shipping lane, the system doesn't just flag it on a dashboard for a human to review over morning coffee.
Which is what it used to do.
Right. Now it autonomously reroutes the logistics, adjusts the procurement budgets, and alerts the warehouse. It's actually doing the work.
That is just wild. And to understand how that is even mechanically possible, we really have to look at what The Code published today. Because they put out this brilliant guide on multi-agent orchestration, specifically digging into the mechanics of Claude Code.
Yeah, that guide was fascinating.
It really was. Because, for anyone following this space, you already know what an AI agent is. It's a bot that does a task. But the orchestration piece is where the actual revolution is happening.
Hey, because you aren't just handing a complex prompt to a single model anymore.
Right. So instead of having one really fast worker, it's like having a whole department of specialized digital interns passing tasks back and forth simultaneously. You have an extraction agent pulling unstructured data, passing it seamlessly to an analysis agent, which then hands the logic over to a coding agent to write the script.
While a fourth agent is running quality assurance on that code in a sandbox environment at the exact same time.
Exactly.
And the technical hurdle they've finally cleared here is maintaining context fidelity during those handoffs.
Context fidelity. meaning they don't forget what they're doing halfway through.
Right. Previously, if you chained models together, they would hallucinate or drop crucial parameters by the third step. It was unreliable. But Claude Code's orchestration framework allows these agents to share a unified context window.
So they're all looking at the same whiteboard, basically.
That's a great way to put it. They communicate in the background, course-correcting each other without human intervention. And that is exactly why the physical hardware from that Mindstream IPO needs so much memory bandwidth. You have hundreds of agents communicating concurrently.
Which brings us perfectly to the analysis from TLDR today on the concept of compounding AI work.
Oh, this is the most critical part of the enterprise shift.
It really is. Because when you have these digital interns, these agents working together in parallel, the productivity gains, they don't just add up. It's not 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah.
The efficiency actually compounds.
Yes, the software optimizes its own workflows over time.
Right. If your quality assurance agent figures out a faster way to debug a script on Tuesday, by Wednesday, that efficiency is built into the baseline for every other agent in the network.
Yeah.
That is what Palantir is injecting into these Fortune 500 companies, and that is why the output is just scaling exponentially.
And that compounding effect is honestly the most dangerous metric in business right now.
Dangerous for the competitors, you mean?
Exactly. Because if you are a competitor in that same sector, and you are still doing things the old linear way, relying on human teams to manually pass tasks between departments, you don't just fall a little bit behind.
You fall way behind.
The math actively works against you. You become structurally obsolete in a matter of quarters.
So if Palantir is proving that compounding AI can double an enterprise's output, it immediately puts a target on the back of any leadership team that ignores it.
Oh, 100%.
Which explains exactly what we are seeing in the information secondary briefing today on Coinbase. They are using Coinbase as the ultimate case study in strategic missteps regarding this exact transition.
Yeah, the Coinbase briefing is a masterclass in the cost of hesitation right now.
Because they didn't ignore it entirely, right?
No, the critical error wasn't that they ignored AI, it's that they misread the velocity of the shift. The information details how Coinbase actually froze their AI implementation and their AI hiring in Q3 because their leadership assumed the technology was hitting a plateau.
They thought they had time.
Right. They treated it like a tool they could just, you know, integrate later when the dust settled. Meanwhile, their direct competitors used that exact same quarter to implement the kind of agentic workflows we just talked about.
The multi-agent orchestration.
Exactly. Drastically reducing their operational and compliance costs while Coinbase was just waiting.
So Coinbase paused to catch their breath.
Mm-hmm.
And their competitors used compounding AI to permanently lower their cost baseline by like 20%.
Which is catastrophic in the financial sector.
When the ground underneath your business model shifts this violently, sitting still is honestly the fastest way to die.
Mm.
But this is where the conversation gets incredibly messy, you know? Because failing to adapt has severe human consequences.
It does. The fallout is real.
And that brings us to Madison Mills' piece in Axios AI Plus today about the layoff blame game. Because right now, across the corporate landscape, companies are announcing massive workforce reductions.
And their PR departments are eagerly attributing those cuts directly to AI automation.
Exactly. It's the narrative of the quarter for executive boards right now. Like, oh, we aren't failing due to bad strategy or bloat. We are simply becoming a highly efficient, AI-driven organization.
It frames a negative event mass layoffs as a proactive, futuristic pivot for the shareholder.
Right. And I have to call PR spin on this. I mean, Mills makes a great point in the Axios piece. But blaming AI for a string of bad quarterly earnings feels like an incredibly convenient parachute for bad CEOs.
It's definitely being used as a shield, yeah.
Because we just talked about how companies like Coinbase genuinely messed up their strategy. So what does this all mean? Are companies using AI as a convenient scapegoat for unrelated financial struggles? Or is this compounding AI work actually replacing jobs at the rate they claim? Like, did they just overhire during the pandemic and now they're facing high interest rates?
Well, it is tempting to dismiss it entirely as a smokescreen, I'll give you that. But you have to separate the tech evangelists from the macro economists here.
Okay, fair.
Look at the context we got from Jamie Dimon's internal modeling at JPMorgan Chase just yesterday.
All right, the Dimon comments.
When Jamie Dimon talks about AI and jobs, he isn't trying to pump up a tech stock or, you know, cover up a bad product launch. He is looking at raw headcount math across the global financial sector.
Just looking at the actual ledger.
Exactly. Dimon's models are actively demonstrating what multi-agent orchestration does to a traditional corporate structure. So while you are right that AI is currently acting as a convenient parachute for some poorly managed companies, the plane is actually going down.
Wow.
The structural reduction in human capital required to run an enterprise is a verified reality at this point. The excuse might be inflated today, sure, but the mechanism behind the excuse is incredibly sharp.
That's just the grim reality of it. The enterprise sector is fundamentally reorganizing around this tech. But, you know, what is truly staggering about this stack of sources today is that this ambient intelligence isn't staying neatly contained in the boardroom or the server farm.
No, it's spilling over everywhere.
It is aggressively moving into the consumer space. It is coming for the devices we hold in our hands and the data we generate every single day. Let's pivot to the consumer war, because the updates from the Code and Axios AI Plus on ChatGPT's new default model are just wild.
They are, because the headline here isn't just a bump in processing speed or like a larger parameter count.
Right, it's deeper than that.
The architecture of ChatGPT has fundamentally shifted toward persistent personalization.
Yes.
They have rolled out major updates to its memory and context retention. The model no longer treats each conversation as a blank slate.
Which was always the annoying part, having to remind it who you are.
Exactly. Now, it actively builds a continuous background profile of you, your preferences, your workflow habits, the nuanced context of your daily life. It learns how you like your emails formatted, what time you usually schedule deep work, and what kind of tone you prefer in your summaries.
So it's acting less like an encyclopedia,
yeah,
and more like a chief of staff that has been working with you for a decade.
That's exactly the dynamic they're going for.
But this level of persistent memory changes the entire power dynamic of the tech industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if my AI knows everything about me and is running my schedule, making my reservations, and orchestrating my personal digital life, the AI itself becomes my operating system.
Which makes the actual hardware in your pocket feel...
interchangeable.
Precisely. Interchangeable. And this inversion of value, where the intelligence layer becomes way more vital than the hardware layer, that explains the staggering strategic shift we're seeing from Apple today.
Yeah, TLDR reported today on what might be, honestly, the most significant concession in Apple's modern history.
It's massive.
Rolling out this fall, Apple is opening up iOS to allow users to select from multiple third-party AI providers to power their native features.
Right.
And for Apple, I mean, a company whose entire identity is built on the walled garden approach, like,
yeah,
controlling the hardware, the software, and every millimeter of the user experience, this is an unbelievable retreat.
It goes against everything they've done for the last 20 years.
Letting an outside AI model natively read your screen and control your core apps is the absolute antithesis of the Apple playbook.
It is, but they are doing it because they realize the operating system is losing its gravity.
Explain that.
Well, if users demand the highly personalized compounding intelligence of an OpenAI model, and Apple refuses to let that model integrate deeply into the iPhone, the user won't abandon the AI.
They will abandon the iPhone.
Exactly. Apple is opening the gates to iOS purely as a survival mechanism. They are trying to prove that their hardware is still the premium vessel for whatever intelligence you choose to run.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because you have to synthesize that Apple news with the other bombshell TLDR dropped today.
The OpenAI hardware news.
Yes. OpenAI isn't just building smarter models. They're officially planning to release their own dedicated smartphone in 2027.
Which is just around the corner.
Right. And this isn't a coincidence. So my question to you is Apple playing a massive game of defense right now? Like, are they opening up iOS in the fall of 2026 to appease users, desperately trying to keep them locked into the Apple hardware ecosystem before OpenAI drops a device purpose-built to run that personalized AI flawlessly in 2027?
Oh, absolutely. It is the ultimate chess match for compute localization. Think about it. If your entire digital identity lives inside OpenAI's context window, and they offer you a piece of hardware designed specifically to minimize latency and maximize the battery life for that exact model,
the switching cost for the consumer drops to zero.
It completely vanishes. Apple essentially has 1 year to convince the world that an iPhone running a third-party brain is better than an OpenAI phone running an OpenAI brain.
The battle for the endpoint is going to be ruthless.
It really is.
It's a battle for where this intelligence actually lives. And just to show you how expansive this hardware land grab is getting, let's toss in the final piece of the puzzle from our Mindstream newsletter today.
Mm-hmm.
Because alongside the multi-billion dollar chip IPOs and the impending 2027 smartphone wars, we have the launch concept for an AI robot pet.
Which, I know, it sounds ridiculous at first.
That totally sounds like a gimmick.
It is easy to laugh at it as a novelty, but you have to look at the underlying mechanism. It is the exact same compounding intelligence, the exact same persistent memory model from ChatGPT, just miniaturized and given a physical form factor.
Of walking around.
Right. It maps your home using the same spatial awareness agents used to navigate data sets, and it learns the behavioral patterns of the people in the room.
Which is so crazy to think about. I have to ask you, the listener, to actually visualize this. Would you buy one? Like, if it had the personalized memory of the new generation of AI, if it proactively learned the habits of your kids or your schedule, would you actually want a physical manifestation of this intelligence literally walking around your living room?
Most people would probably say no today.
Right, because we are treating it like a toy today. But it is really just another endpoint for the exact same ecosystem.
And that is really the through line of everything in our stack today.
Yeah.
We've mapped the entire stack of this architectural shift. We started at the bedrock with new semiconductor designs required just to handle the sheer bandwidth of this new software.
The bigger container.
Right. Then we moved through the compounding multi-agent workflows of Palantir and Claude Code that are fundamentally rewriting how logistics and enterprise code operate.
Which led to the messy corporate realities.
Exactly. We saw how the velocity of that enterprise shift is creating brutal corporate realities, from Coinbase's fatal hesitation to the real macroeconomic headcount reductions being tracked by financial titans like Jamie Dimon.
It's unavoidable.
And finally, we see that exact same intelligence personalizing itself for the consumer, forcing Apple to tear down its walled garden, driving the impending 2027 smartphone wars, and literally manifesting as physical companions in our homes.
It is just a breathtaking pace of change. I mean, we started this deep dive by talking about how AI used to be a walkie-talkie, right? A simple, contained tool that waited for you to ask it a question. But as we wrap up today's sources, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over as you step back into your day.
Yeah, what's the takeaway here?
If this technology is no longer waiting for our prompts, if it now has a permanent compounding memory of our personal lives, if it operates in invisible swarms of autonomous agents running our corporate logistics, and if it is literally about to walk around our living rooms in the form of robotic companions, at what point does our psychological relationship with this technology fundamentally break from the past?
That's the real question.
When do we stop treating these systems as sophisticated tools that we just pick up and put down and start treating them as digital entities that we are forced to actively coexist with? Because looking at the evidence today, the smartest companies on the planet aren't building tools anymore. They are building an entirely new layer of autonomous infrastructure, and we're just trying to figure out how to live inside it.
Well said.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep asking questions, keep challenging the narratives, and stay curious. We'll catch you on the next one.